Again, good morning. Good morning. If you would open your Bibles, we will be in Galatians 6, verses 1 and 2 today. Galatians 6, verses 1 and 2. While pastoring in San Diego, I had a great opportunity to meet a lot of military people. San Diego is beautiful, but the military people are super awesome to get to connect with, and I especially like the young Marines. It's interesting. Do you know how it's, like, the Marines have, like, this unique character to them, unique personality? But I got to connect with a lot of young Marines, and I asked one specific young Marine one time, what's boot camp like? What's it like to go to boot camp? And he began talking to me, and we as know, we got some men in here, and whenever we're in a group of men, we're not the smartest ones in the world. But we are competitive, and we like to see who's better than the other one, who's stronger, who's faster. So I started asking him those questions, and he looked at me like I was insane. He said, Nick, that's not what boot camps is about. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, let me explain to you. He goes, there's something called the wall. I go, what do you mean, the wall? The wall is this 10 to 12 foot wooden thing, wooden wall, that begins to be the equalizer. And I kind of explained it this way. He goes, we have an obstacle course, and we start running the obstacle course, and you quickly see who's stronger than the other ones, who's faster, who has more energy, who actually came prepared for boot camp and who didn't. But the wall is there. And you run, no matter how fast you are, you get to that wall, and guess what? You're not getting over it by yourself. So no matter how strong you are, no matter how fast you are, you're running this obstacle course, and you get to this wall, and you have to stop. And the point of it is to make sure you understand you cannot do this alone. You need a team. And so what happens is when that first guy reaches the wall, he's just jumping up by himself, thinking he can do it, and until someone comes along and they begin to work together. And again, the point of the wall is to make sure that they, as the young Marines, know they need help. And it needs a team to move forward. When was the last time you hit a wall in your life? I don't mean like a real wall. I didn't mean like you run into like a glass door. I've done that before, unfortunately. Hurts. I don't mean like a wooden wall that you kind of like had to jump over because you got in trouble for something. I mean a trial, a season, whatever that means, that word we use, a burden. Like you are running life and you are going, you're just cruising, and that wall hit. You weren't expecting it, right? We don't get told the wall is going to come. And you hit that wall, and you start jumping, right? I got this. And you start jumping a few times. I got this. Eventually, you get tired, and you start getting huffing, puffing, and you're like, okay, what do I do next? And you have a couple options at that point, right? Maybe the first option is, I'm going to just sit down, right? Because if I can't do this on my own, I'm not going to get it done. And so you just give up. Or maybe there's another option. As we continue in our One Another series, I'm going to talk about the other option. See, unfortunately, we live in what we call an individualistic culture. What does that mean? Individual, one, myself, me. We have our three favorite people, right? Me, myself, and I. Yet, that wall, whatever it is, takes another person. Shows us we can't do it by ourselves. So as we come into the One Another series and we continue in this series, we're going to talk about today carrying one another's burdens. Helping each other get over the wall. So again, would you turn to me with me in Galatians 6, verses 1 and 2. And we're going to look at this idea. What does it look like to carry one another's burdens? And I'm going to ask another couple questions in there because that question, that phrase, that statement's a little broad. But I want you to leave here understanding why I might not allow someone else to carry my burdens. what it looks like to carry someone else's burdens and why. So again, Galatians 6:1-2. Let me read it. Two short verses, but I promise you I'll give you a full sermon still. Don't need to worry about getting out of here early. I said that before a sermon. I heard someone say, yes! Galatians 6:1-2. Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Again, we're talking about this idea of carrying one another's burdens, but let me just give you the context of Galatians. I think it's important as we talk, just not about this specific one, but about all of the one another's. Galatians is a unique book. The church at Galatia, they were a group of Christians that forgot that it was only through Jesus that they could walk with Jesus. They thought that they had to do other things. Jesus plus allows me to walk with Jesus. And they did little things like following the Jewish law, eating certain foods, living a certain way. And they bought into this lie that Jesus wasn't enough. And while we're not worried about what we eat, except for the dieting, we can fall into this trap too. And I'll kind of show you how it works. We'll sometimes use language like this. And I'll give you two examples, one good, one bad. First of all, the good one. Jesus died for me. How can I not live for him? Jesus died for me. How can I not live for him? Versus, Jesus died for me. I owe him my life. You see the difference? They sound so similar, but they're very different. I'll explain the difference, and I'll explain it this way. Husbands, listen to me. Eyes on me. One thing you do and one thing you don't. I'll start with the bad. Husbands, you go home and you're like, man, I love my wife. She's amazing. And you go and you're so excited. You go grab some flowers. No matter how expensive the flowers are, do not do the next thing I'm about to say. You grab the flowers and you go to your wife and you go, honey, I love you so much. I owe you these flowers now. No matter how expensive the flowers are, you're sleeping on the couch that night. Versus, honey, I love you so much. I just wanted to give you these flowers. You see the difference? One's a transaction. I owe you these things now. Versus, out of the love that I have for you, I'm going to give you these. See, we can live our lives and we're going to do these one another's out of a duty, right? We can. Duty. I'm supposed to do what Pastor Nick, what Pastor Allen tells me to do. Versus, I've experienced the love of God. How can I not live that way? And so as we go into this text, as we come into how to live a life where we're carrying one another's burdens, I need to be reminded I can only do this out of deeply loving and being loved by God. You will never do it out of duty because these are too hard. You are not that strong. You are not that great. Even though your mom might have said you were, you need to experience the love. So as we move into this text, the Galatian church forgot that, and I do not want you to forget that. You only follow Jesus because Jesus is enough. You do not owe him anything. You live out of that love for him. And so now we make active decisions. And the first one is here, Galatians 6:1. Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. The word caught can be idea of overtaken. But when I see this, I picture this idea of fishing. Do we have any fishermen in here? I mean, someone who actually fishermen, who can actually catch fish. Like I have a fishing pole, I have a hook, and I have bait. Not necessarily all of those are going to work well. But one thing I know from my rudimentary knowledge of fishing is if I throw the hook by itself into the lake, creak, whatever I'm going to throw it to, unless I accidentally hook a fish reeling it in, I'm not catching anything, right? What do you got to do? You got to put bait on it. And what does that bait do? Does that bait mimic what I'm going to eat? No. Maybe if we eat the same thing. It mimics what the fish would eat. And so that bait's thrown out into the lake. It looks so good, so tasty. Yeah, what's inside of it? A hook. See, when I look at this word, when I look at this statement right here, this is where I have a picture. Like, the devil doesn't play nice. He has that hook. He throws out that hook. It has that bait, and that bait is for you. He knows you. And he throws out that bait, which is a bunch of lies about God, a bunch of lies about yourself, and with a little bit of truth, because it looks good, right? Like, power bait smells bad, but it looks good to the fish. And so my picture is the devil's thrown out this little bait with the hook, and whoever this person is caught in transgression has taken the bait. And now you, as their friend, you as the one who cares deeply about them, are watching in their lives, and you have two ways to react, right? And I've seen this too often. And the one way is this, and listen, this is how they say it. I can't believe they would do that. Have you ever heard someone say that? I've heard it way too much. I can't believe they would act that way. And I hear that and understand. It's like they failed you or something. It's like they failed your expectations. Or you can act like this, or you have this reaction. I can't believe they bought that lie. Not in a negative, but in a brokenhearted way. I can't believe they took the bait. Like, one is love. One is like they failed you. You can see why Paul, writing to the church at Galatians, says, lest you too be tempted, because we can be tempted to say, you're a failure. I can't believe you fell for that. Versus, man, let's do this. Let's work together. Let's get you out of this. And the two are miles apart. One looks at the person caught on the hook with compassion and care. As someone who has bought the lie, whatever that bait is, that bait's going to be different for every one of us. And it looks so good. And you're like, that's not even bait. That's not even a lie. And that's the scary part of it. And we look at the person and we can say, God, please be with them. I have a tale of two people, two stories. One, when I was becoming a new Christian, came to faith in Christ when I was in university, like 20, 21 years old, and I started creating new friends. Like, that was just the weirdest thing in my life. I went from not loving Jesus to loving Jesus, and I started to get new friends, and I started building these friendships. And out of these friendships, I had one specific friend that I grew really close to. Like, we would sit in the car and just talk about Jesus all the time. Like, I thought this dude was on fire for the Lord. And we're walking, talking. You've had those friends, like when you're a new Christian and you're like, man, you're watching them and they're like, I just love talking about Jesus with you. We're talking about life and what life could be like. And slowly but surely, as I grew in our friendship, I start to see things in his life. I'm like, man, those things don't add up. Those things, that doesn't make sense. What you're saying over here and what you're saying over here do not connect. And as our friendship grew and our friendship kind of blossomed, or like, I began to understand, like, okay, you're actually just lying to me. You're making up of your own world that you want me to believe you are. And slowly, as I begin to understand that, I broke my heart. And so I come to him and I start talking to him and I go, hey, dude, what you're saying doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. And he said, no. He pushed me away. He said, no. That's not true. Like, yes, it is. And finally, and I said, no, it doesn't. It's not true. He said, no, it's fine. Everything's, don't worry about it. And I said, okay, man. Broke my heart. Because he denied what he was doing. He had caught the bait. His bait was he wanted to look good in front of other people. He wanted to be perceived as something special. 12, 13 years later, he's still in that lie. Versus, I had a conversation with someone about a month ago. and this person said something that kind of hurt me a little bit. I don't think they were caught in a transgression, but it hurt. And I come to the person, I connect with them. I said, hey, I just want to let you know, like, this is what you said, and this is how I felt when you said it. And he looked at me and said, I'm so sorry, dude. I didn't mean it. I apologize. You see the difference? One person acknowledges what they did. The other person ran away. I had no, I did not force anything. I could not force them. Simply, their heart had to either accept or reject me. That's the scariest thing about this moment right here. Remember, we're talking about bearing one another's burdens. Here, the bearing of the burden is, hey, I want to say something to you because you're living in this lie. We have people in our lives where we can watch that. They're literally living in a lie. You can see it. Everyone else can see it except for them. And now you are going to approach them, and you're in compassion and care going to say, this is what I see. I don't want you to live in the lie anymore. Please come back and be what? Restored. And now you are accepting the opportunity. You are accepting the consequences of them either rejecting you or walking with Jesus again. And that's scary. So what do we like to do? We're just going to put it off to the side. But that's not what we're called to here. And who restores? It says we are called to restore them, but who restores? Is it just pastors? Is that the elder's job? Let me email Elder Ron. And then we're going to let Elder Ron deal with this one. Or Pastor Allen. It says those who are spiritual. And simply what that means is those who have the Spirit of God. You and me. And I'm honest, like, we want to be careful. Because when we go to fight darkness, when we go to fight those who are in the living in a lie, the devil will fight dirty. And he will try to tempt you too. And so we come prayerfully, seeking the Lord. It's hard. It's scary. But we bear one another's burdens. We go to them saying, walking with Jesus is better than that lie you're living. Accepting the consequences, trusting the Lord. Paul continues here in this thought and broadening it from just caught in a transgression to this idea of bearing one another's burdens. Galatians 6:2, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. Simple words, yet very complex. Bearing has this idea of caring. I remember when I was younger, I'm still young, I used to do some hiking. And we lived right next to the mountain, so we'd go about 7,000, 8,000 feet in the air. Not flying, but like that's how high the mountains were. And we go hiking. And I don't mean like hiking like multiple days. I do not sleep on the ground. I do not sleep in tents. I don't know, that makes you think of me. That's just who I am. So we just go hiking for like 4 or 5 hours. So we're five or six kilometers deep into the wilderness into like these mountain hikes. And one of my friends begins to hyperventilate. So he's about 250. I'm probably about 220 at that point. I am now trying to figure out how we're going to get this 250-pound man 4 or 5 kilometers back in. So we sit him down and we start kind of like giving him a chance to rest and finally catches his breath and we begin our hike, but we are like, hey, we just want you to walk by yourself. Not by yourself, but we're going to carry your load. Remember when you go hiking, you got to carry your food, your water. We're going to carry your load for you. You, in your weakened state, we're going to carry that. We're going to carry your bag for you. The weight of the water, your food, whatever you have it with you, we're going to carry that. I picture that here. Like, again, we go back to that illustration of the wall, right? The illustration that we have of those young Marines at the wall, looking at the wall. They have a couple options. They can just keep jumping, or they can wait for their team who are going to now carry them, push them up over the wall. Someone's going to grab their arm and pull them over, and now they're going to do that for each other. And now this is the idea of caring here. And Paul calls the church at Galatia. He calls Bethel Strathroy, Bethel Southwest, Bethel North, to take and carry the burdens of another. But what's the burden? What's a burden? Burden can be a job loss, loss of a child, sickness, grief, relational tension in your marriage, relational tension with someone in church, sickness, loneliness. Man, the list is massive. Like, what a burden is so long. And we live in a broken world. And if you haven't had a burden yet, oh my goodness, you are so lucky. Trust me, it's going to happen. Not a Debbie Downer here, but it's reality. And they don't happen when you're ready for them, right? It's not like you're doing your jumping jacks, you're doing your weights in the gym, like, I'm going to ready for my burdens, here we go. No, they come up out of nowhere. And we have a couple opportunities. And I just picture this sometimes. Like, I picture like a massive wall, like that wall that I keep explaining. And I just picture a massive wall. And I picture us so much in the church like this. Like, we're at the wall. We're jumping up. We're looking at the person next to us. Oh, you're jumping up too? Oh, you're jumping. Hi, I'm jumping too. We're going to get there, right? And the person next to you, yep, we got this. We're going to keep jumping. And the person next to you, yeah, we're jumping too. And you're like, we're all doing it separately. Why? And I understand why. I kind of do. Like we go, like, if I step into where that person is, that next person, like, it might hurt. Right? There's many of us in here, like, we've done this. Like, Nick, I've heard this sermon before. I stepped in community and I got hurt. Maybe when you're a little kid, like, you like showed weakness somehow, and like someone just looked at you and made you feel like an idiot. Maybe it's like you're an older adult and someone, like a good friend of yours, like betrayed you. So you're like, hey, if I step into those places where I can be vulnerable or like my burdens can be buried, they might hold it against me. So guess what I'm going to do, Nick? I hear what you're saying. I believe what you're saying, but it's not worth the cost. There's an idea some of us have in our head. It's a lie. Hear me. This is a straight lie from hell. That I can't be a burden. There's a story I have of a good friend of mine. He was going through a deep, dark sickness. I mean, bad. Like, he thought he was going to die. He was close to dying. And here's a story he was sharing with me where he was, he couldn't sleep anymore. It was right before he got rushed to the emergency room. He couldn't sleep. He was in so much pain because of the sickness. And he began to share this with me. He goes, Nick, I was pacing in my room at 3 a.m. Pacing. I was in so much pain, I couldn't sleep anymore. And I didn't want my wife to know how much pain I was. I didn't want to be to her a burden. So he stood in his room, walking back and forth by himself because he believed he couldn't be a burden. How many of you guys believe that yourself? I can't be a burden to someone else. See, we walk into this room, we all have different journeys. I know we do. Your life is, I don't want to project my life onto you. I don't want you to project your life onto me. But I do understand all of us are walking different journeys. We have a life that has entered this point into listening to this sermon. But I want to tell you, you being a burden is not a weakness. It's part of being human. And God created you and me to be in community that we might carry each other's burden. Because if we don't, we're left to be vulnerable. Like, have you ever watched those lion hunts? Have you? Oh, they're so cool. Sometimes. Not cool. I don't know. Depends on your view of animals. You have the lion hunt, right? And you watch these lions, and they're beautiful animals. And you see them, and they're running, and they're running, and they're running. You have these massive gazelles. And what do? Do they go after all of the gazelles at once? No, what do they end up doing, right? They start sectioning one off. And eventually they get the one who's by themselves. Because as you're together, you're strong. But when you're by yourself, you're vulnerable. And what does the Bible say about the devil? He's like a lion, looking around, finding who can he destroy. And he does it by making us vulnerable and putting us by ourselves. Again, going back to that kind of that first idea, making us believe the lie that if we step into community, if we're walking this journey with someone else, we're either weak or someone's going to use it against us. And again, I want to be honest. I know some of you guys have stepped into community before and it bit you in the butt. And so you're not going to do that again. I vow not to let that happen to me again while living your life vulnerable to being destroyed. We think independence is a virtue, but over independence places in an arena that the Lord never allowed us to be. We think independence is a virtue in this culture, but independence leaves us vulnerable, which leaves us in a place where the Lord can just, not the Lord, sorry, where the devil and sin can destroy us.
Why?
Why? Because we need each other. You were created for a community, and God made you that you would work with a group of people, not by yourself. We actually look right here, like this word bearing each other's burdens is not a suggestion. It's not like, hey, this might be a good idea, try it. If it doesn't work, we'll try something different. It's a command. Paul looks at this church in Galatia and says, bear one another's burdens. Again, there's no such thing as a Lone Ranger Christian. This is why we do small groups here. Like, I don't know here, I don't know here that often, but at Southwest, we're talking about small groups almost every single week. Small groups aren't just something to give you something else to do during the week. I promise you, you have tons to do to the week. I have tons to do. Sometimes I don't want to add another thing, but small groups are there because you move from this building here where you can be unknown. Like you can walk into this building, leave this building, and not have a single person know your name, know your struggles, know your weaknesses, know what you need help with. And then you're going to leave here and go, man, no one cares. No one knows what's up with me. And we start to believe these lies, like, hey, like if they just understood me, they would not love me. If they understood me, they will not get me. If they understood me, they'll use it against me. And they're all lies from the devil. And we have small groups to begin to break down those lies, to live life together, and to do, like, to help each other. Here's a great story. Like, I love small group. And there are some days, if I'm honest, Alan, close your ears. Like, I just don't want to do small group. I just don't. Please, Daryl, do not hold that against me. Because I'm tired. Like, who's, like, you come from home from your work and you're tired. Yeah, I work more than one day a week. Maybe you didn't know that. Well, I come home and I'm just exhausted, but then, okay, let's get some energy. We got our food in our stomachs. And then we move to small group. And I just love this because we begin our small group every single time going around a circle. And I go, what can we be praying for you for? And we stop and pray. And we go to the next person, what can we pray for? And it's not like this obligatory, like, oh, Jesus, pray for my dog's toe. It's like, no, we just lost, like, we just dealt with severe loss in our life. And we're going to send you to the Lord. And we're going to pray for you. And we get to know each other. And they get to know who we are, our weaknesses. And there's one guy in our small group. So I'll be honest. Like, I struggle with discouragement. Like, I really do. Like, I promise you, you'll never be harder on me than I am on me. And someone in our small group really knows that. And so he loves to do this. And he loves to give me a random call in the middle of the day. And he says, hey, Nick, how you doing today? I said, it's going. He goes, the Lord prompted me to call you and to encourage you. And like 99% of the time, he's right. Either I'm discouraged a lot or the Lord is prompting him a lot. And he calls me. And he just encourages me. He says, the Lord has you, Nick. You're okay. If I didn't have a small group, I wouldn't get that call. See, we come and we have to step into this place of vulnerability, of openness, where we might be hurt. I will be honest, you could get hurt. You might have been hurt before. I'm honest. Like, that could be you. But the Lord is asking you. If he's asking you, he will protect you. Can you take that step? What does it even look like? What is bearing one another's burdens like? I'm beginning with this. Encouragement. 1 Thessalonians 5:11. Therefore, encourage one another and build one another up, just as you are doing. Ephesians 4:29. Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as good for building up, as fits the occasion, that may give grace to those who hear. Like, just imagine this. Maybe you're an older mom in here, and you've walked that journey of just little babies to toddlers, and you know the craziness. Now your kids are crazy teenagers, and you're trying to figure out what happened to them. But you're just like, okay, but I remember the toddlers. And you can just go and encourage someone in your small group, like a young mom or a young dad, and say, it gets better. It's kind of crazy. Enjoy these moments. It's good. Maybe you're that maybe you're a mom with a teenager, and you're like, my goodness, what is wrong with them? They have changed completely. Yes, that's what happens when they're a teenager. And you just had that older family. And the mom and dad are just come to you, and they go, hey, it's okay. It gets better. See, if we're living life on our own, we don't get that. And so we just sit in this middle of this world of like, we're by ourselves. No one understands us. No one gets us. And we just self-implode almost. Again, like that wall, jumping up and down, jumping up and down, jumping up and down. Eventually what happens? You just give up and sit down, right? We can be encouragement. We can have emotional assistance. Romans 12:15. Rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. That's hard. I remember one small group. Literally, we had one family just crying because of something deep happened in their family, moving to the next group, and they were just excited for this. Next group crying because something happened. Next group, we like excited. And it's like, what? Oh my goodness, up and down, up and down. But that's small group for you, right? Like, we're being honest about where we're at, and we're praying to the Lord for all of those. And so we're going to rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep, and we get to do it together, not alone. Physical assistance. 2 Corinthians 8:1-5. We want you to know, brothers, about the grace of God that is given among the churches of Macedonia. For in severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy in their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. For they gave according to their means, and as I can testify, and beyond their means, of their own accord, begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints. When we come and we're doing life together, sometimes we bear the burdens of financially helping someone else out, physically helping someone else out, using our gifts, talents, treasures to be there for someone. That's what small group does. It really does. Like, literally, these people know.